Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right. Welcome back to the Weekly Worldview. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the news of the week through the events of the week, the news of the week. We focus. Anyway, not very focused right now, obviously, but we do something about the news of the week. You know, I wasn't able to tolerate most of the news of the week, so I don't have a lot of news this week. So hopefully we'll be able to fill an entire hour for your entertainment and edification. But the news was just so dark and dismal this week that a lot of stories didn't make the cut because, well, frankly, they were getting me down. I'll comment on some of the major news of the day. Where to start? Oh, yes, we focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought is what he was slated to say as the show opened. And I want to welcome you all back. Let's start with a story from LifeSite News, one of my favorite pro-life websites. You should all check it out. LifeSite News. The story goes something like this. Georgia Holt was 20 years old and recently separated from her husband when she found herself pregnant. She had to move back in with her mother, who, when she found out Georgia was expecting, gave her daughter an ultimatum. She told her to reunite with her husband or get an abortion. Well, Holt at first opted for the abortion to the point that she even went to the clinic for the scheduled abortion. She says, quote, "I can remember the chairs were chrome and I was sweating and the sweat was just coming off me on this chrome. And when the door opened and it was my turn, I turned to my mother and said, 'Mother, I can't do it.' So that's how my daughter is here." That was 1946, and the daughter in question is Cher. That's Cher's mother. Cher, the entertainer, allegedly, she's an entertainer, who's a vociferous defender of Planned Parenthood. Yeah, and this article from LifeSite News goes on to document a number of tweets that Cher has put up over the past several years, defending the rights of women, the so-called right of women to kill their children. Yeah. And so you go to LifeSite News, check it out. I will link to this on the website, on the blog. But this struck me because now Cher is a defender of Planned Parenthood. And just what a difference one godless generation makes. You go from Cher's mom, who couldn't go through with it in 1946. Oh, yes, there were abortions in 1946. But they were done in dark rooms, and they were very rare, and they were hidden, and they weren't proclaimed as a right in front of God and everybody. But her mother couldn't go through with it. But one godless generation later, you've got Cher out there encouraging and defending the killing of innocent people. And folks, we are now two or more generations from even Cher, depending on how you count generations. I mean, but anyway, don't be depressed, because as long as a remnant of people retain the knowledge of our Creator God, well, He and His people can restore the kingdom or the republic or whatever we have. I don't know what we have anymore after this week, I'll tell you what. I don't think any of this is what the founders had in mind. Let's go. Let's start. We'll comment on the Kermit Gosnell case, the abortionist out there in the Philadelphia area. I'm afraid, ladies and gentlemen, there's not a jury in America who will convict Gosnell of murdering any of the babies. I mean, I'm sure he'll be convicted of having dirty implements and letting unlicensed people do this and that and not crossing his T's and dotting his I's. He might even be convicted of killing the mother, although I doubt that. But I don't think you can find a group of 12 people, in a jury especially, without at least one of them who's participated in abortion. and who is unrepentant about it. So I don't think Kermit Gosnell will be convicted. How long have they been? They've been in deliberations for, I forget, 8, 9, 10 days. It's ridiculous. I know there's a lot of charges to sort through, but a lot of those are fairly obvious. And I think the one that the jury is hung up on is about the killing of the babies, because isn't killing babies a right? I mean, how can we convict this guy of... Anyway, I think it'll be very difficult to see Kermit Gosnell convicted. Now, on these kidnappings, it's been a very dark week in the news. Did I already mention that, it was dark and depressing? Anyway, I want to be your ray of sunshine today. But before I do that, let me quote Alan Dershowitz, who was on... I happened to catch Piers Morgan the other night on television, and Alan Dershowitz was on there with Gloria Allred, a cabal of evil. And Dershowitz was freaking out about the fact that prosecutors want to pursue murder charges against the Philadelphia kidnap dungeon situation. They want to pursue murder charges because one of the girls alleges that he killed five of her children. He starved her. He beat her. Philadelphia? Did I say Philadelphia?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's Cleveland. I get confused. It was some dilapidated city back east.
Yeah.
Philadelphia, Cleveland. I'm sorry. Cleveland. You're right. I'm adjusting my notes for no good reason, because I'm going to throw this away as soon as I'm done. But it's Cleveland. Yeah, yeah. We all know the story, right? The three girls chained in a dungeon for 8 to 10 years. The young child who emerged. But five were murdered by this guy. And prosecutors want to pursue charges. And Alan Dershowitz said, nope, that's the wrong thing to do. Let's not turn this into a debate about abortion. Let's not do that. The last thing we want to do is start talking about abortion. Can we just shut up about the abortions? Alan Dershowitz. Now, Gloria Allred disagreed, which I was shocked. I actually spit water up through my nose when she said, I disagree, and I was waiting to hear what she disagreed about. One of the most famous baby killers in the history of the child-killing industry, Gloria Allred, a defender of all things evil and black and dark and wicked. Well, she said she believes that prosecutors can pursue charges, but the charge would be unlawful termination of pregnancy. Never mention the word abortion. Never mention the word murder. He terminated these pregnancies unlawfully, said Allred. And so she has a very legalistic way of getting around it and agreeing with the prosecution. Folks, the whole legal infrastructure there in Cleveland, in Ohio, is terrified of the issue of the personhood of these unborn children. That's what they're scared of. They hate to see this topic even come up, and they're terrified that charging this man with murder could cause court records to exist where it's argued that these babies were people, which is what they were, and which is why this fellow should be executed for any number of reasons. Kidnapping itself should be a death penalty offense. And certainly locking someone in a dungeon for any period of time should be enough to execute this person. But apparently, unless they go for the murder charges on the babies that were killed, they can't even bring a death penalty case against a guy who locked three girls in a basement for 10 years. That's how broken the justice system is there in Ohio and across the country, frankly. But they're terrified of the issue of personhood. You could see the fear in the eyes of Alan Dershowitz, Piers Morgan, as well as Gloria Allred. You could see it was the elephant on the set, the issue of the personhood of these children and the fact that they were murdered not all that much differently than children are murdered every day legally here in America. All right. And now Benghazi. Do I want to talk about the IRS story? Well, whatever. The IRS. So Obama's using the IRS to go after his enemies. Well, in Benghazi, by the way, I'm against that. I'm against Obama doing that. I'm just surprised that anybody's surprised at it, and I'm surprised that anybody admitted to it. Somebody must have had a smoking gun on this one for them to admit what they were doing in singling out conservative organizations, Tea Party organizations. I got some Tea Party news, too. I'm going to get to that probably right at the end of the show. All you folks who think the Tea Party is the salvation of the country, well, I've got some sobering news for you that we'll get to toward the end of the broadcast. So please stay tuned. Let's talk about Benghazi. I have a question. The big question to me in the Benghazi affair is, why did Barry Ho allow Ambassador Stevens to be killed? It sure seems to me that he allowed him to be killed. If forces on the ground were gassing up their helicopters ready to go, somebody had to tell them to stop, and there's only one somebody that can do that. Because I don't think there's a general from four-star on down or a colonel, certainly not a lieutenant colonel in the military, who would have refrained from going in and trying to save the lives of Americans under fire in a foreign land. So there's really only one person who could have given that command, and that's the President of the United States, one Barry Ho. Anyway, the whole thing just seems so set up, that Barry would go to sleep that night, that he would be allowed by others to go to sleep as the consulate was under attack, if indeed he was sleeping. We don't know. He might have been partying. That's quite possible. I have not eliminated that from the list of factors that may have influenced the actions of the president that night. The bottom line is, we don't know where the guy was, which is fairly unusual for the president of the United States. As far as we know, he was asleep. But I don't know. Ambassador Stevens was sent into a very, very dangerous situation, not only in Libya, there in Tripoli, in the capital, but out in Benghazi, even more dangerous. And you know, leaders, political leaders, have been known in the past to send men into danger, even get them killed in order to cover up for their own crimes and their own sins. I mean, we know the story of David, right? David sent Uriah the Hittite into battle, said put him right up there in the front, right at the tip of the sword, because David was having an affair with Uriah's wife. But we know that Barry was not having an affair with Ambassador Stevens' wife. How do we know that? Because Ambassador Stevens was never married. Yeah. In fact, sources in Chicago say it's well known in Chicago political circles that Ambassador Stevens was a homosexual. In fact, he was a homosexual from Barry's old Chicago days, way back there when he was a state senator. Yeah, it's almost like Vienna in the 1920s, the political circle there in Chicago back in the 1990s, full of homosexuals and freaks and liberals and communists and stone Marxists at the bathhouses there in Chicago. That's where Chris Stevens was from. And him and Barry, well, they used to run together back there in Chicago. And, well, I just don't know. It's just all very confusing to me. And I'm just asking questions, folks. If you can help me, please. Send me an email or something, because we don't take calls. Oh, by the way, back to the Cleveland story. That's the kidnapping and the dungeon and the chains and the slavery and the murdering of the babies. Right there in that community where the houses are right next there. The houses are 3 feet from each other there in that community. And I read an article this morning, members of the community wondering aloud, how could it happen here? Well, folks, is it too politically incorrect to express shock and disgust at how the people in this Cleveland neighborhood look? I mean, there isn't that much facial jewelry and that many tattoos and missing teeth and festering sores at the medical tent on the last day of Sturgis, for crying out loud. This community is terrifying looking to me. I'm in shock that this is America and not some third world country. I mean, did you see every single person interviewed either had a record or was running from the law, hiding from the law, had beat their wife? I mean, it's just unbelievable that communities like this exist in what we once called America. But it really, it goes back to what I said about Cher. It only takes one godless generation to lose an entire civilization. And we're two or more generations out, folks. But don't let it get you down, because the remnant is right here. And you are one with the cause. And a reason to be. You were a fighter for peace on this earth. And you were never afraid. You put your life on the line. And you were always alone out on the sea. Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Sorry to let that play so long, but I needed that. Like I said, it's kind of getting me down, and I just needed that. Thanks, Vito and the boys. Appreciate that. All right. Now, we're going to go to the war file. This is a bit disappointing, this story. I was following it all week. I have this story from the Boston Herald about the embalmer. The embalmer, I said, out there in Boston, who was stuck with the body of one of the bombers. And he was getting so frustrated that they couldn't find anyone to take this body and bury this terrorist, which to me, it lent me some hope that there's some people in America who haven't lost their minds. At least we can't bury this terrorist, and he's just going to rot in the bottom of some a mortician's office. I thought that was completely appropriate. Well, apparently, someone in Virginia offered a burial plot at a mosque. And it was done, and now apparently the guy's been buried. It's unfortunate because I had a brilliant suggestion for what to do with his body. Yeah, I did. He needed to be wrapped in a pig and then boiled in bourbon, incinerated, and then his ashes should have been loaded into the front of a laser-guided bomb that could be prepared for the city of origin of the next terrorist attack. That was my suggestion. I thought the pig part was especially insightful, knowing that the mighty warriors of Allah, they think that, I don't know, if you wrap them in a pig, somehow that affects their eternal destiny. Now, right there, if you go to a religion where they say if you're buried with pork on you, or pork fat, or you're wrapped in pig skin, that somehow you can't go to paradise, I'd be like, well, wait a minute. What's up with Allah? I mean, if I'm going all out for Allah all the time, and He is my God, and I worship Him, and I end up, someone drops a piece of bacon in my casket, and now I can't go to paradise? You got to think that a young Islamic man would be asking himself some questions about that. Well, wait a minute, it's just a piece of bacon, mighty Allah. Surely you can forgive the indiscretion of whoever was eating that bacon double cheeseburger at my funeral, but no. No, they don't go. They don't go to paradise if there's any pigs or, I believe, alcohol, I think, right? Anyway, so that was my suggestion, but I've been eliminated from the equation by some Muslim, I'm sure, in Virginia who buried this dirtbag at a mosque. Unfortunate. All right. We'll go from one bomber to another. That's the sound of my extremely attractive audio engineers. She's preparing material for the broadcast as we speak. Really appreciate that. We're going from one bomber to another. Bill Ayers was in the news this week because he was out at Kent State. He was interviewed. This is from, where is this from? Ohio.com? What is that? Ohio.com? There's a website, Ohio.com? Apparently there is. That's where I got this story. Bill Ayers says people should not equate the bombings that he and others in the Weather Underground committed 40 years ago. Do not equate those with the April 15th bombings there in Boston that killed three people. And here's what Ayers actually said in the interview. He said, no one died in the Weather Underground bombings. At which point I'm reading the story and I'm thinking, well, I know Bill Ayers did a lot of drugs. But I was only like 2 years old when this all happened, and I know what happened with the Weather Underground bombings. And folks, let me refresh your memories, because Ayers did mention, as he was there on the campus on Kent State, memorializing, what was he memorializing at Kent State? Oh, yeah, the hippies who got shot at the riot by the National Guard. You remember, Four Dead in Ohio. Isn't that your favorite Neil Young song? Four Dead in Ohio. My extremely attractive audio engineer has never appreciated the body of work contributed to the arts by one Neil Young. Never. But anyway, he's out there at Kent State memorializing these hippies that were gunned down during a riot back in the 60s. And here's what Ayers said later in the interview. After saying no one died in the Weather Underground bombings, Ayers mentioned that in 1970, he lost three close friends in the Weather Underground. I know. He says, including his lover, Diana Oaten. Now, in his talk, he did not elaborate on how they died. But, folks, they were killed when the nail bombs they were making in an apartment in a townhouse blew up. That's how they died. So one could technically say that that people did die in the Weather Underground bombings. It just so happens that they were members of the Weather Underground. But they did. People did die, and the bombings very well could have killed some people. I think there was someone else who had a heart attack. I don't remember. I was only 2 years old. But I do remember the Weather Undergrounders who were blown up and killed in the Weather Underground bombings. Now, questioned after his talk by a reporter, Ayers said, well, telling the crowd there at Kent State the circumstances of those deaths would have been inappropriate. And besides, everybody here already knows. He's talking to a bunch of college kids. They were all born 20 years after the Weather Underground bombings, Mr. Ayers. They don't know. They don't know what happened. And you are obligated to tell them, but I forgot. You're a liar. You're a liar, and you're the son of Satan himself. And you're a bomber and a terrorist who should be dead, strung up, hung in public for what you did. Instead, he's on the faculty. Where's he on the faculty? I don't even want to give them any press. Wherever he's, Columbia or NYU, I don't know where he is. Maybe he's in Illinois, University of Illinois. Yeah. Oh, he's retired. He retired with a nice fat pension from the University of Illinois, Chicago. Instead of being drawn and quartered in public and killed judiciously by the government, as he should have been. Now I'm getting worked up. This is depressing. All right. What can I do? I need some Tim Tebow news. Now, poor Tim Tebow, he has been released from purgatory, as you know, but he is now dwelling somewhere in the nether world. The nether reaches somewhere between backup quarterback in the NFL and I think he bought a chicken shop. He bought a chicken sandwich outfit. Or he invested. So he's debating now, do I want to be in the NFL? Do I want to sell chicken sandwiches? Not where any one of us would have thought he might have ended up just a few months ago. A year ago, I should say. But Tim Tebow, let's see here. There was a poll by Forbes, which is an economics magazine. And they asked Americans, who are the most influential athletes in America? And who topped the list as he vacillates between the NFL and selling chicken sandwiches? It was Tim Tebow.
Oh, no.
All right. You may have noticed, ladies and gentlemen, that my extremely attractive audio engineer still has a soft spot in her heart for Tim Tebow.
No, it's not for me. It's for you.
Oh, it's me? No, I thought it was you.
No.
Oh. All right. So anyway, we still have a soft spot in our heart for Tim Tebow, and we sure wish... That who's that quarterback for the Broncos now?
I don't care.
Oh, okay. Peyton. We wish that Peyton Manning would find a way to get him signed back to the Broncos. Probably have to oust John Elway. By the way, I have a theory on why NFL teams are hesitant to sign Mr. Tebow at this time. Now, here's my theory, and you take it for what it's worth, but I have a feeling that in general – the NFL is an extremely immoral operation. I think you got a bunch of young, testosterone-laden athletes out on the road, and there's just a lot of immorality that goes on. I mean, from the top on down. I mean, from the deviant perverts. John Elway comes to mind. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I have no evidence that he's ever been anything but a fine, upstanding citizen. Who was telling me that he frequented strip clubs in Denver? Who was that telling me that? Do we remember? Was that a good source?
I don't know.
But we don't know if that was a good source. Somebody told me that recently. I found it hard to believe that someone as famous as John Elway in Denver would be frequenting strip clubs in Denver while he was married to his wife and had him and his kids, and he's a marquee player. I found it hard to believe. But it's just a rumor that I heard from I can't even remember who, so I suppose I shouldn't repeat it. But anyway, back to my theory, now that I've undermined my ability to have a theory by passing on a rumor by someone who I think used to frequent strip clubs.
No.
Oh, no? Oh, you remember who told me that?
Yeah,
okay, let me cut the sound out. Tell me. Okay, all right, that's right.
So, I don't know.
So it was a reliable source, but we heard the news secondhand. Anyway. Back to my theory, all right, if you haven't already tuned out, bear with me just a moment. So there's all kinds of immorality that goes on in the NFL, and I think that the news about NFL players, they get arrested, they beat their wives, they get picked up with hookers, they do all kinds of stuff all the time. So I just have a feeling that the league itself is permeated with a culture of immorality, okay? And I think that having Tim Tebow in the locker room or on the team or on the bus or on the plane makes all the heathens very uncomfortable. Because it's as if Jesus is on the bus with you, right? And they're plotting how to go get some coke and hookers, and here's a representative of Jesus Christ sitting in the back of the bus watching. And so Tim Tebow is a threat to the culture of immorality that dominates the NFL. And so that's why teams are very squeamish at this point about picking him up. By the way, I read a chart online about the quarterback rating. Now, my dear, are you familiar with the quarterback rating?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, it takes into account five or six different things, including pass completions, number of yards, rushing touchdowns, passing touchdowns, interceptions, and they amalgamate all these numbers together, and you come up with a number at the bottom. So anyway, it's how good a quarterback is overall. In the game.
Okay.
So there was a chart that I read that compared Tim Tebow to Peyton Manning, John Elway, and two other famous guys. I can't remember who they were.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it compared them through their first 15 games as a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And Tim Tebow's quarterback rating was better than all of them.
Ooh.
So it can't be that the guy's no good and the guy can't play. There has to be an ulterior motive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I have touched on it. And I only hope that this season that some team in the NFL finds itself in such a quandary that they're forced to bring Tim Tebow on. That would be awesome. And then, of course, I would be following that team. I would declare myself a fan. in complete bandwagon fashion, I would be a fan. So anyway, Tim Tebow is declared by Forbes as the most influential athlete in America. He's not even working at the moment. And he also has 2.2 million Twitter followers. And now we haven't checked. We used to compare Bill Maher to Mr. Tebow in their number of Twitter followers. But we haven't done that as of late because we've lost interest in Bill Maher, frankly. I have no reason to follow that up. No. Well, only when he was bad-mouthed Tebow, then we had an interest in it. We wanted to hunt him down and wring his neck, but anyway. All right, now quickly, folks, let's move on from Tim Tebow to this this plastic 3D-printed gun. Have you heard this story? A gun called the Liberator is the world's first 3D-printed handgun. This is from Fox News, and it has been successfully fired by its creator in Texas. I saw the video. Guy shot the gun. So a New York congressman has already called for national legislation to ban 3D-printed guns. He's all over it. I won't give his name because I don't like to give any of these losers any press. But he's a New York congressman. Says, well, we need to ban these 3D-printed guns. It's a threat. Folks, the guy with the 3D printer, he's basically, I don't understand why anyone in the government's freaking out. This guy has produced the equivalent of an 1890s breech loader. Made out of plastic that can probably only be fired one or two times. This is the type of pistol that anybody can buy and sell as an antique gun. They're not even regulated. You don't even have to be a dealer to buy and sell breech loaders of this caliber, for crying out loud. And everybody's freaking out because the guy printed it and they made it work and all that. Well, the fellow who made this gun, do I have his name here? The company is called Defense Distributed, and the fella's name, he's a 25-year-old UT law student. His name is Cody Wilson. Took him 8 months to create this gun. He took it out and shot it on YouTube, and he's already got a New York congressman all wound up about banning 3D-printed breech-loading single-shot pistols that were used back in the pirate days. But here's what the creator says about his 3D-printed gun. He says that the goal of the Liberator, of creating the Liberator, is to highlight how technology can render laws and governments all but irrelevant. So here we are, folks, two or three generations from Cher's mom not being able to go through with an abortion to a college student who thinks technology can make laws and governments all but irrelevant. This is what happens when you raise a generation of children without a knowledge and a relationship with their creator. They become completely delusional. Let me tell you something, young man. The laws and the government will never be irrelevant because they are ordained by the creator God, you stupid child, okay? Now, it is in the heart of man where evil lurks that can render laws and governments all but irrelevant for a brief period of time, but only for a time, young man. For the law and the government, ultimately, even though you don't like them because you've been taught to question authority and be a contrarian or whatever your trip is down there at the University of Texas in Austin with all the other freaks and liberals, whatever your trip is, the government and the laws are ultimately from God. And he will not allow them to be thrown off or thrown away or rendered irrelevant indefinitely, young man. Whether you have a 3D-printed breech loader from 1892 or not, they will not be rendered irrelevant. And it's just a matter of time, young man, before you learn that lesson yourself.
My mind.
Yeah. I think this punk's walking around campus there in Austin waiting to come too. It bothers me that these ignorant children, they get this, they get a stage because he printed a gun. And he's a completely vacuous, moronic, stupid child. And people are taking him seriously. It's just embarrassing. It's as bad as John Maynard Keynes. So let's go to a story related to John Maynard Keynes, who is a communist socialist economics professor who's probably the most influential economic theoretician of his generation. He's pretty much ruined everything. Yeah, John Maynard Keynes. Well, he was alluded to by one Neil Ferguson. He's a Harvard history professor. And last Saturday, he was interviewed. And during a question and answer session, this is according to the Associated Press. During a question and answer session, after a prepared speech at the Altegris Strategic Investment Conference in Carlsbad, California, last Thursday, Neil Ferguson, Harvard professor, was asked to comment about John Maynard Keynes, an influential 20th century British economist who advocated government spending as a way to make up for lagging demand in a down economy. That's John Maynard Keynes' claim to fame, in case you didn't know. Well, Ferguson, that's Neil Ferguson, Harvard professor, suggested that Keynes' philosophy was shaped by his homosexuality. He says Keynes, therefore, had no children, so he wasn't invested in future he wasn't as invested in future generations as others might be, said Ferguson. Well, the remarks were reported online, and Mr. Ferguson was chased from town with pitchforks and torches, and they were threatening to kill the poor guy. Anyway, so on Saturday, he apologized in fear for his life and his career there at Harvard. So he immediately apologized, and on Saturday, he acknowledged the remarks and said he deeply and unreservedly apologized. So any time someone uses more than one adjective before the word apologize, that means I'm only doing this so you don't kill me or fire me. I don't mean it. I deeply and unreservedly apologize, he said. Here's what he said in his apology. So he says, look, Keynes was a fag. He had no kids, and so he wasn't invested in the future. A fact that is obvious on its face to anyone who has ever studied history or economics, even peripherally, ladies and gentlemen. You don't have to be an economics professor to know that Keynes was a godless homosexual. In fact, one of his most famous quotes when asked about, well, what happens if we run up a lot of debt, Mr. Keynes, and we can't pay out, we're saddling future generations with all this debt. What if Keynes' response was, well, in the end, we're all dead, aren't we? Come on. We all know where this guy came from. Anyway, the professor said, I should not have suggested in an off-the-cuff response that was not part of my presentation that Keynes was indifferent to the long run because he had no children, nor that he had no children because he was gay. Okay, well, I think that most of us know that the fact that he had no children probably did have something to do with the fact that he was a homosexual. But this guy, he's just running for cover, this poor Harvard professor. His career might be over. But hey, don't worry about it, Mr. Ferguson, because in the end, we're all dead, aren't we, mate? Oh, bloke, oh, chap. Unbelievable. All right, so, by the way, I had to give up on reading. What was I reading? I was reading Human Action by Ludwig von Mises. I got through about 300 pages. I just can't take it anymore. I mean, yeah, the guy's smart, and he has some conservative economic philosophies that I agree with. But I'm just not impressed. It's not impressive to me when someone that intelligent can be so foolish about his own God and his own creator. And so I lost interest. And he's not that great of a writer. Not exactly a page-turner, Human Action, by the way. So my pastor, Bob Enyart, is preparing. I don't even know if I can say this in public. I might get in trouble. I guess I better not say it. Well, you'll all just have to wait on that one, okay? That's all. I'm not going to let the cat out of the bag on that. Have Bob come into my house getting mad at me. for. Anyway, he loaned me the book, but I gave up on it. I do recommend it to anyone who is in college right now who's being influenced by John Maynard Keynes and other deviant perverts. At least von Mises wasn't a queer, okay? And he wasn't a communist either. And he did seem to have some investment in the fate of future generations, so we can give him that. But he hated God, and he's currently dwelling in about the fourth level of hell. All right, now, from one homosexual to another, there's new evidence, according to Breitbart, that Adolf Hitler was a homosexual. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Doctors who treated Hitler were interviewed by the U.S. Army after World War II, and the notes from those interviews have now been made public. So an interrogator interviewed Hitler's doctors, both Karl Brandt and Hitler's personal private physician, Theodor Morell. And the notes indicate that Theodor Morell, in the checkbox, there's a little checkbox and a line when they asked him what was Hitler's sexual proclivities. And the interviewer wrote homosex, which is probably short for homosexual. It sounds like a dirty word, but it was an abbreviation, all right? So Theodor Morell, who was Hitler's personal physician, said to the interviewer that Hitler was a homosexual. The doctors told Merle, the interviewer, by the way, was one Hermann Merle, contemporaneous, 1945-ish, there at the end of the war. Hermann Merle, the doctors told him that Hitler did not sleep with his girlfriend Eva Braun in her bedroom, and that he himself received female hormones. Merle wrote in the notes, Hitler, female hormone injections, 50,000 units. Yeah. Merle wrote that Hitler was hysterical and a megalomaniac. Now that we all know. We can all agree on that. But nobody wants to accept the fact that Hitler was a hysterical megalomaniac, homosexual deviant pervert who almost destroyed the world. Previously viewed notes indicate that Hitler was also injected with bull semen for testosterone. He was just a confused individual, hysterical, megalomaniacal, but a homosexual. He was also an amphetamine addict, which Dr. Theodor Morell documented well. He had used to inject him with amphetamines not almost every day, but at least once every day, sometimes more. And so it turns out, folks, Hitler was a hysterical, megalomaniacal speed addict. He'd fit right in the Castro district in San Francisco, right? He'd fit in at any given disco or gay bar in the Castro. In fact, it's well known to people who've studied history, even a little bit, amateurs like myself, that Hitler cut his teeth in Vienna, Austria's equivalent of the Castro district back in the 1920s. Hitler was well known to frequent the bathhouses and homosexual bars there in Vienna in the 20s, where he developed his hysteria and megalomaniacal personality, his bloodlust, and everything else that almost destroyed the world. And so I'm not saying that Hitler almost destroyed the world because he was a homosexual, but when you study what Hitler and his minions, his circle of influence, were all about, homosexuality and pagan religion both figured very prominently in the formation of their worldviews. And hence, we should all extrapolate from that it's dangerous and destructive to allow those worldviews to be expressed and advocated publicly as if they are as good as if not even better than normal heterosexuality and Christianity, which is what's happening today. All right, now, speaking of that, what's happening today? Over at ABC, Don Ennis is a newsman there. He works for the network ABC there in the New York City office. Well, he has now become Don Ennis. From Don Ennis to Dawn Ennis. That's difficult for my extremely attractive audio engineer. She's always had a difficulty with certain American names. Don and Dawn being one of them. And this story isn't going to help, my dear, because this guy's name was Don, and now he's Dawn. He says, please understand, he's made a public statement, of course, because no longer are deviancy and perversion kept quiet. No longer are people ashamed of the fact that they can't control their sexual perversion. Now they come out in public. He says, please understand, this is not a game of dress up or make believe. This is my affirmation of who I am and what I must do to be happy in response to a soul-crushing secret that my wife and I have been dealing with for more than 7 years. Oh, he had a wife. Oh. No, she left him immediately. I'll get to that. Ennis walked into his Manhattan office last Friday in a little black dress, and he was wearing a brunette bobbed wig. He went there to tell colleagues that he was now to be called Don.
It's just...
Now, this fella Don Ennis, I'm not familiar, because I don't think I've watched ABC News in 20 years. Maybe Nightline once in a while, right? Catch it, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
But ABC, just 20 years, I'm out of the loop on ABC, okay? So anyway, he goes in, he says, I want to be known as Don. He claims he suffers from an unusual hormone imbalance, and he blames his mother. This is unbelievable. His mother fed him female hormones as a child to prolong his commercial acting career as a child actor. He says those hormones screwed him up pretty bad. They helped him look and sound young, but he eventually developed female breasts. Okay. I mean, you know what, Don? I guess I feel for you. That's pretty rough, man. That's pretty rough. Now, he admits, though, that he's been undergoing hormone replacement therapy on his own. So mom's not feeding them to him anymore. Now he's getting the hormone injections himself. He's trying, he says, to maintain, quote, a more female than male body. He has not undergone any surgical procedures as of yet.
As of yet.
But he does say that his marriage to his wife, Wendy, is wrecked. He moved out of their family house last Saturday. The day after he went down to ABC and told everybody he was now Don. He came home and his wife had all his stuff in the front.
Please,
my dear, get out. So, his wife appears to be somewhat normal. Although she wishes him well, of course. She loves him for who he is and she's going to celebrate with everyone else. In fact, to celebrate the change, please. Is that an understatement or what? From Don to Don? I suppose technically it's a change, but I think it warrants a little bit more copy than just the change. Anyway, to celebrate the change, Ennis brought a cake and glitter to work. Glitter. The homos are obsessed with glitter, I've noticed. Anyway, he brought a cake and glitter to work, and coworkers reportedly left flowers on his desk. Why? Because if they didn't, they would be fired. Quite possibly, in New York, they could have been arrested for not putting flowers on the desk of the latest tranny there at the office. In fact, the president of ABC News even wrote a note of support to make sure that he wasn't taken down by the commissar and fired and possibly imprisoned. So everybody's celebrating Don Ennis becoming Don. The story about his mother, frankly, is disgusting and outrageous that she would do this to a child, and she obviously screwed her son up something terrible. There's no doubt about that. But I'm sorry, Don, we don't let you get by with it because you're an adult now. And, you know, just because you're mentally ill doesn't mean that you have to celebrate your deviancy and your perversion so that other little children might be fooled into thinking that that's normal and it's okay, Don. I mean, you had a crazy psychopathic mother who fed you whatever, hormones. These other little kids are going to see you on TV, you and all the other freaks and fags and queers that are pouring out every closet. And they're going to start thinking this is normal. And they don't have mothers screwing them up. You're screwing them up, Don. Perpetuating the cycle, so to speak. It's unbelievable that this can happen. It's simply shocking that anything like this can happen in public and everybody celebrates it. You know, this guy should have a trench coat thrown over his head and he should be in handcuffs. Instead, everybody's throwing glitter around. Oh my, I've noticed that we're almost to the end of our allotted time. And I was worried at the beginning that maybe I wasn't interested enough in the news, and now I've gone long. I've got stories I want to get to. I have to go quickly. We're going to go to the Justice File. It used to be the Justice File, but in America there is no justice. So it's just a file from which we pull stories related to the legal system. Jodi Arias who is a world-famous murderer with thousands of fans. I wonder how many Twitter followers this freak has. She says, I don't want... She's been convicted, by the way, of murder, for those of you who are normal and don't tune in to the trial every night there for the last 6 months or whatever. She's been convicted of murder of her partner in fornication. I don't know how to describe the guy. Anyway. She says, I don't want to spend the rest of my natural life in one place. She says, I believe death is the ultimate freedom, and I'd rather have my freedom as soon as I can get it. So she's asking for the death penalty. And so people are thinking, well, is she asking because she really doesn't want it? And so maybe we should give it to, maybe we should put her in jail for life because that's what she really, because she's a devious little, you know, she's a manipulator. Anyway, it doesn't matter what Jodi Arias wants. What we need to do is correct her misgivings about death being the ultimate freedom. Yeah, she needs to be corrected on that. And the way to do that is to immediately introduce her to Jesus Christ. And he'll correct any misgivings she has about death being the ultimate freedom. You see, folks, this is what the younger generation has grown up, as I've said now, all these generations growing up without a knowledge or a relationship with their creator, they think, and that's why you have all these murder-suicides, because these people actually think that if they kill themselves, they somehow, they get away with it. And that's dangerous, dangerous thinking. Ladies and gentlemen, I mean, it's almost as deranged as John Maynard Keynes, who said, well, in the end, we're all dead, aren't we? Well, no, we're not all dead, Mr. Keynes. We're not all dead, Ms. Arias. We're actually going to stand before our Creator and be judged. There is going to be a judgment, and we're going to have to give an account for every idle word. You see, now, my mom and dad, they taught me from the time I was a little kid that God is real, and someday you're going to meet him, and he's going to judge you for every idle word. By the way, my dad's in the hospital. Open heart surgery. It's going okay. But anyway, pray for him, folks. I will be. I talked to my mom today. It's Mother's Day, by the way. Happy Mother's Day to everyone out there. Talk to my mom. She's holding up pretty well. In fact, she almost sounded like she was on vacation. Dad's in the hospital. You know, she's got the run of the place. Anyway, he's doing okay, so she was pretty upbeat, as a matter of fact. Anyway, I want to thank my mom for teaching me from the time I was knee-high to a grasshopper that God was real and that not only was God love, but God is justice. And that you're not going to get away with anything. In fact, when you die, you're going to meet Jesus face to face. I'm glad my mom and dad inculcated that into my brain when I was quite a young child because it helped me to end up being a fairly well-adjusted human being and relatively normal. Okay, now there we go. That leads right into the bad religion file. A story about where morals come from CNN. How about that for irony? A story on CNN about where morals come from. Franz Deval, he's a director of Emory University's, some of these titles for these university jobs, what's the deal? Do you get paid an extra 10 grand for every word that's in your title? 10 grand a year extra? He's the director of Emory University's Living Links Center at the Yerkes National Primate Research Center at Lawrenceville, Georgia. Well, he studies.
Is it really?
That's it. I read it. I didn't make that up. That's his title. I mean, that's a half inch of copy on a broadsheet for the old newspapers. Those of you who remember those. Just to describe this guy's title, for crying out loud. Anyway. He studies how our close primate relatives demonstrate behavior suggestive of a sense of morality. He says, I want to address the issue that I think morality is actually older than religion. Duh. He's a real genius. Morality's older than religion. Yeah, that's because God is good, and he was good before he created all this. He was moral. So look, I agree with this guy right from the beginning. It's going to be a delightful report. He says, religion, instead of being the source of morality, religion came later, maybe to fortify morality. The guy's a genius. I'm on board with him right now. I'm actually on board with everything he says. Here's what he says next. He says, 100,000 or 200,000 years ago, our ancestors had moral systems. Now, our current religious institutions, he says, are only a couple thousand years old, which is really not old in the eyes of a biologist, blah, blah, blah. He goes on and on. Well, first of all, Mr. Franz Deval, Religion, well, 5,000 years for Judaism, just so you know. 5,000 for Judaism. He says a couple thousand. And obviously, let's not get distracted with any other facts, folks. This is an attack on Jesus Christ and Christianity. We know that. I mean, the guy's a professor at Emory University. You think he's going to be attacking Allah? Do you think he's going to be attacking Judaism? No. He's going to be attacking Christianity, the Catholic Church in particular, and any Baptist that gets in his way. That's why he mentions the 2,000 years. He's asked, why do people need religion? He says, I'm struggling with that. I'm personally a non-believer. Okay, well, that was fairly obvious, professor. The fact that you have professor before your name in America circa 2013 indicates that you're personally a non-believer. Anyway, he says that we learned it from the apes, basically, I think. He says there's a lot of evidence on the primates that I can use to support the idea. Oh, they asked him the question, do you believe people are inherently good? He answers, yes. I think there's a lot of evidence in the primates that I can use to support the idea that we are inherently good, especially me, he says.
Oh.
No, I added that part. But it was implied. Especially me, I'm good. Anyway, get out of here with that, professor. Yeah, 2,000 years old. I mean, how can a professor even say that and not be like drummed out of his professorship? Religion's only 2,000 years old. Anyway. Minor story, folks. Nothing to be concerned about here. Delaware has become the 11th state in the union to legalize homosexual marriage. Yeah, not a big story. I mean, the 11th. Now, the state already had existing civil union laws, not unlike the ones that were recently passed here in Colorado, that were supposed to satiate the homosexual community, right? Well, we'll give them civil unions. It'll be fine. No. A couple years later, you'll have the queers marrying in public at the cathedral. You name it. They want marriage, folks. And it's not because they want to be married. It's because they want to destroy heterosexuality. They want to destroy normalcy. And they want to pull the entire civilization down into their deviance and perversion. That's what it's about. They don't want to be able to visit each other in the hospital and to be able to list each other on their tax returns as man and wife, for crying out loud. But where was I? Delaware has now legalized homosexual marriage, joining Rhode Island, Iowa, New York, Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Maine, Maryland, Washington, and the District of Columbia. They all, according to the article from the Political Ticker, all these states allow same-sex marriage. No, that is not an accurate description. They don't allow it. They celebrate it. They encourage it. In fact, when the first homosexuals get married in Delaware, they'll be throwing glitter all over and there'll be cameras everywhere. You'll be knee-deep in glitter there in Dover, right? Oh, they don't allow it. Come on. We have a quote from some homo. Today, we wrote a new chapter in our history. And we proved once again justice and equality continue to move forward in Delaware. That is from, who was that? I don't know who that was. Oh, that was the governor. The governor of Delaware, for crying out loud. That, he doesn't just allow it. Come on.
He talks like that.
Well, I intonated the lisp. Because, to me, I have a philosophy similar to George Bush's about terrorists. He used to say that you're either with us or you're with the terrorists. Or if you harbor a terrorist, you are a terrorist, right? Well, I say that if you harbor homosexuals and you encourage that, you are one. So when I quote you, I will lisp. You, when I quote you, you will lisp. If you're one of these freaks who is promoting the destruction of the civilization into which my three daughters have to grow up, okay? That's why I get upset about this. This is not just an academic exercise, you perverts. I have three daughters that you're trying to destroy, and I take it personally. They have some quotes from some opponents in the new traditional marriage industry. Are you familiar? There's one particular group, the National Organization for Marriage, raising millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars to defend what they call traditional marriage while never mentioning the fact that marriage was ordained and created by our Creator God and that it's sacred. And no, they just say, well, it's traditional. I think Thomas Jefferson was married. I think George Washington was married. Isn't that why we support marriage?
I mean, just like all just the way it always was. It's just a tradition. Well, listen, National Organization for Marriage, I know you're going to raise $5 million this year or more, but if you leave God out of the argument, you're destined to fail. And that's why I call you the traditional marriage industry, because not unlike the pro-life industry, you've now sprung up, led by a bunch of lawyers, to argue everything except the fact that these things have been defined by God, and that's why we cannot break them. The sanctity of life, the sanctity of marriage between one man and one woman. These aren't just traditions. These are the oracles of the living God, you fools. And he's not going to appreciate you raising a bunch of money so that you can win the battle in the next state and only keep the state to passing civil unions. That's what the National Organization for Marriage will actually do. The next state that votes for civil unions, they'll send out a fundraising letter saying, hey, over there in Wisconsin, we stopped the attack on marriage. They only got civil unions. We're important. Send us some money. It's a tradition. It's a tradition to raise money on these type of issues. In fact, we could probably all retire if we fight the battle carefully. All right. So now I've attacked not only the homosexuals, but the people, the only group that was quoted speaking out against homosexual marriage. Well, now I've attacked them too, which shows you how narrow-minded I am, no doubt. All right, now we've got a quote from Chad Griffin. He's the president of homosexual rabid activist group, the Human Rights Campaign. He says, thanks to the principled impatience from state leaders in Dover, the momentum for LGBT equality continues unabated. Did you hear me? I said unabated. This homo is a true believer, you see? He doesn't cite anything except their desire to win this battle. And that's why the folks in the traditional marriage industry over there at the National Organization for Marriage, they will be defeated and crushed by these homosexuals. Now, we in the remnant, on the other hand, will not be. Because we will keep our children out of the perverts' hands by keeping them out of the government schools. We'll keep them from watching the pipeline of filth through the TV. And we'll raise them in the fear and admonition of the Lord. And a generation from now, our children will destroy them. We will raise a generation of warriors to defend not traditions, not George Washington, not Thomas Jefferson, not the Constitution, but the oracles of the living God. Those things that are eternally ordained from heaven and from God. And we will not leave God out of the argument. In fact, God is why we will win the argument. And all you lawyers can cash all your checks and drive your BMWs and do whatever it is you do. Buy your house in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. But you will be defeated. But don't worry, the Christians will come. The remnant will show up and save you pathetic people from yourselves. You can count on us. We'll be there. All right. From the politics file, what do we have on Benghazi? Hitler. I looked and it said Hillary, and I actually said Hitler. Oddly enough, Hillary may have misled Congress in her testimony a few months ago, remember, before she left office, but she likely did not commit perjury, according to Breitbart, because she was never actually sworn in, so she wasn't under oath. She didn't raise her hand and swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, which, when you got Hillary, I mean, it's pretty obvious you better have her do that, right? Anyway, so she wasn't under oath, so she can't be charged with perjury. So I guess we'll have to get her on the treason, maybe. Or the murder, perhaps, we could go after her for. Anyway, so there's Hillary. Now, finally, Tea Party news. This is from Breitbart again. Paul Ryan was asked if he supports the concept of an internet sales tax. That's a stupid way to ask the question. Why didn't they just ask him, do you support an internet sales tax? Why do they have to ask, do you support a concept? Support a concept. What are we, in college? For crying out loud. Anyway, Paul Senator, my extremely attractive audio engineer, predicts that Paul Ryan's for it. Well, here's what he says, my dear. He says, I don't think the Senate bill is written in a tight enough way right now, the bill legalizing an internet tax. He says, I'd like to think there's a way to address this inequity, the fact that they're not taxing everyone to death. So Paul Ryan says, if we could just spread the misery properly... Anyway, he says taxing online purchases would help level the playing field for brick-and-mortar stores that have to collect taxes. And, yeah, he says he does support the concept of an internet sales tax. So that just about does it for the Tea Party, in my opinion. Okay? Although we do know that Mr. Ryan was corrupted by the bowel movement started by Mitt Romney there. Not the conservative movement. No, Mitt Romney was part of the bowel movement known as the 2012 election. All right. Now, on that note, I hate to end on that note, because that was a little bit of a downer, but hey, that's it. We're out of time, and I'm out of news, and I got nothing more to say. But should the Lord tarry, I will return next week. I want to thank my friends at Denver Bible Church, KGOV, Personhood USA, American Right to Life, and as always, of course, I want to thank my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll return with you next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.